Game on.
Game on.
2FM.
And you're very welcome to Game On here on 2FM. It's Hugh Cal with you until 8 o'clock tonight. We're going to talk golf in a few minutes' time after a good day for Rory McIlroy and a great one for Paul Dunne. Roland O'Gara and Bernard Jackman on rugby ahead of a busy weekend in the Champions Cup. We have Ty Kennelly on the international rules test between Ireland and Australia this weekend. And Jeff Shepherd, all things USA. 51552 for your text at Game On 2FM on Twitter. If you've anything to say between now and 8 o'clock, we'd love to hear from you as always. And Gary Murphy is with me in studio. How are you?
I'm good. You hearing yourself?
I'm not too bad. You know, tough 24 hours if you're a New Zealand rugby fan. Richie McCaw announced his retirement today, 24 hours after the very sudden and tragic death of Jonah Lomu. I mean, two All Black legends, one retiring and one passing on. So very different circumstances and very different emotions around them. But equally, it's just, I suppose, a tough couple of days for the All Blacks fans.
It has, really. And there was a beautiful... Someone put up on Facebook the Kiwi flag with one of the leaves loose from it, which is fitting for Lomu's untimely death, and very sad for someone so great and so young to die at 40. It doesn't make any sense, really.
No.
And then obviously Richie McCaw retires, and you know, I think we all knew it was going to happen, and you know, another legend for the game, and hopefully he can maybe as an ambassador pick up the mantle where Jonah left and fill that void.
I mean, McCaw's legacy as a player is just mind-blowing when you go through the statistics. 148 tests, and he won 131 of them. 110 as captain, including 97 wins and two World Cup titles, not to mention the Tri Nations titles and the Rugby Championship. I mean, a good point I made, I read in The Guardian earlier today, New Zealand don't tend to retire test numbers, but what they do expect is that the attitude of the person coming into the All Black side gives everything to preserve or better the effort and attitude of the person that's gone before them.
Mm-hmm.
You'd feel sorry for the likes of Sam Kane and Ardie Savea, who are the two main contenders to take over from Richie McCaw at open side flanker.
Yeah, I think Richie McCaw is a generation player. You know, he's a Tiger Woods in golf or a Jack Nicklaus. You don't replace people like that. You just... You know, you probably need two people to replace him, really. And but I think the big thing is to play that, you know, in a contact sport like rugby. And I always remember after the tragic death of Gary Speed, the footballer.
Yeah.
He had a rule that he lay down or slept for 2 hours every afternoon after training. Now, some people might think, oh, that's pretty lazy, but he conserved his body that much and got his the absolute maximum. And I'm sure it was no different for Richie that he, you know, to have an amazing discipline to stay that fit.
Yeah.
And to play for that long. It's not just that he avoided injury, but his discipline off the field must have been as he was a bit indisciplined on the field, but well, he was offside a lot of the time. But
yeah, we're not talking about a winger here. And no disrespect, because I mean, wingers more and more have had to deal with the physical demands of the game, and they say that there's no room to hide at all on the rugby pitch now. But, you know, for an open side flanker and one who lived on the line or over the line as much mm-hmm. as Richie McCaw did throughout his career, you know, there was a World Rugby put up a tweet earlier on just highlighting some of his biggest hits that he put in throughout the course of his career. And the manner in which he tackled guys, the manner in which he carried into contact and stole possession on the ball, the most physical position on the rugby pitch. And he did it at the top level, at the best of his game. Since he was 20 years of age.
His tolerance for pain must be incredible.
Yeah.
Say he goes to the dentist and just has an aspirin or something. in you go. I think Daniel Sturridge for Liverpool should take a leaf out of his book, because he's... sick note, and you know, he doesn't play when he's injured. I mean, I'd be curious to see of all those tests how many times he was fully fit for those 147 or whatever it was.
My dad and myself used to play a game called hitting each other till it hurts. So you just take it in turns, and the first one to give up, you wouldn't want to play that against Richie McCaw.
No.
He'd be there all night. We do have a competition, by the way, and as I mentioned, we're going to talk to Ty Kennelly a little bit later on about the International Series match between Ireland and Australia, Croke Park. This week on the show, obviously, we're counting down to the Airgrid International Rules Series under lights at Croke Park. Official sponsor of the game, Airgrid, have given us some very nice prizes to give away this week. We have been giving away a family set of four tickets for the last few nights. Last night and the night before, we're giving another family a set of four tickets tonight. And then we're going to pick one of this week's three winners, and we're going to upgrade that prize to include accommodation on the night, and also the prize for one of the children as well to lead out the team and be a mascot on the match as well. So if you'd like to enter that, we'll have details coming up very, very shortly. Stay tuned for that. And as I said, 51552 for any of your text messages. Now, we're going to speak to Paul Dunne in a couple of minutes' time, but just give me your thoughts on what he's managed to achieve. I think you said to me at the start, the statistic was that one player last year who started in the first round of Q School made it through to get their card. Two players out of hundreds. I mean, that's phenomenal.
Guts of a thousand, really. So it's remarkable to... We had 28 Irish players went through the process of Tour School. Actually more, because there was five, so 33 guys went through, and only one got a card. And he's technically, you know, up to 6-7 weeks ago, an amateur golfer.
Yeah.
Which even, makes the achievement.
And on the back of what he's done already, Gary, this year, I mean, the physical fitness and the mental drain he must have had to go through, on top of what happened at the Open, on top of playing in the Walker Cup, on top of the NCAAs and everything else that's come between making his professional debut in a tournament, just phenomenal, really.
Yeah, he's had a long year, there's no denying that. And this year, in 2015, the last card at Tour School, played 19 events. And he probably would have probably could have got into a couple more and wouldn't, because he had a particularly poor year, the same guy. So Paul is, guaranteed mid-20s. And it's a platform, and that's all he can ask for.
Okay.
You know, he was going to events on a couple of invites, and I thought he did remarkably well in the events he played in. But he's a platform now. He'll have sit down with his guys and he'll have a rough idea what ones he'll get into, and he can plan around that. I'm sure he'll get a couple of invites as well, but the big thing is to monitor that schedule and not play too much either. You don't want to just play because you're in. You need to be ready to play events.
Yeah, and you can understand why a guy coming through will just want to play everything he can, but how many times have you heard golfers, including yourself, talk about
that? Absolutely, I did it. Like in my first year in 2000, I played 14 in a row. It's insane.
Were you knackered?
Yeah, but you're
adrenaline.
You're kind of pawing for form, and you keep going just because you're in, because you don't know when you're getting in. But you can't perform at an optimum playing that much, so it's very important. And there's some events that he won't get into, and that's fine. And use those as rest weeks or weeks to get ready for the following week or whatever the case may be. But he's young as well, and he's fit, and he's keen, and it's a bit like the jockey on the stallion. He just wants to go flat out, but you have to do a little bit of steering.
We're going to talk to Paul in about 5 minutes' time. He's just checking his bags into an airport in Spain as we speak. So as soon as he's done that, we'll get him up on the phone.
He's not flying private yet. He's
not yet. Worse. Not in the McElroy School. You spoke to Peter Lawrie today.
Yeah, I was chatting to Peter. Peter's okay. He's a little upset, but he's got he'll have plenty of opportunity next year. You know, the categories, obviously, he'd like to have gotten through, but he actually had a good year and just missed out. And the way, historically, those guys didn't get much opportunity, but now the tour, in fairness, there's less guys keeping their card, and he'll have plenty of opportunity to play. And I think a rest will do him good, take a couple of months off and clear that.
Jamie McGrain, I mean, it's pretty well known that he was planning to retire next year anyway and was just going through the motions to see if he changed his mind. Is that true?
I don't know. I don't buy into that. I mean, I think it's very difficult to believe a lot what the guys say, because they got a mic stuck in front of them at an emotional time of year, and you can say things. And if he was thinking at all of retiring, he wouldn't have gone to Tour School.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't have done as well as he's done. He had a very bad day today, and he'll be devastated tonight, I've no doubt, because he doesn't have much of a category for next year. And it's hard at his age to go out and play Challenge Tour. And it's probably not something that he will do. So it's a little bit of a crossroads for Damien. And, because he won't get much golf next year unless he gets some invites. And I don't know how he'd fare out with that. I mean, they were good to Peter this year, but...
Yeah, and for a few different reasons as well that came behind it. I mean, Damien, and I don't want to be disrespectful and say this, we spoke to him a couple of times on the show. It didn't sound to me, and maybe that was just his mood on the day, and you can't read too much into it, but it didn't sound, any time that I heard him speak, that he was particularly enjoying himself this year.
No, he undoubtedly wasn't enjoying himself. There's no, I mean, I've been there. You don't. It's horrendous. you don't enjoy it at all, but you're still kind of looking around the corner to next week, hoping and thinking, well, maybe, you know, I'm back at, did well here last year, I like this course, this, you know, because golf is all about weeks. And I mean, we saw that last week, Chris Broberg, you know, he wins the BMW Masters, wins over €1 million. And it's, he's up in the Ryder Cup, and now he's thinking, you know, in a totally different way. And golf can be like that, but it can also be haunting.
Hmm.
And Damien has had a year where he's getting a little bit older. He's out of form. His confidence is low. He's surrounded by young fellas, bombing the ball miles by him, shooting, you know, kind of 13, 14, 15 under week in, week out at your ease, and you're struggling to break 73 or 4.
Mm.
And it's, you know, that is heartbreaking. But I was surprised with him today. I actually thought he'd got over the line. He battled so well to get into that position. And
his experience, you thought, would have just...
Yeah, but it's draining. You know, it's 6 rounds in 6 days, plus your practice. And, you know, there's no downtime emotionally for 9-10 days. It's absolutely exhausting. And it's much harder, with not doing Paul Dunne a disservice by any stretch, but it's much harder for guys like Damien McGrain. Like Richard Finch got through today. Eduardo Molinari got through on the limit.
By, you know, birdieing 4 of his last 8, Molinari.
Yeah, phenomenal. On the front line as well.
You compared it to Glen Eagles in 2010, the back
totally.
Line.
It's a tougher stretch. And, you know, it's harder for the older guys because, like, Damien's been out there 13 years in a row.
Yeah.
He knows exactly what he's missing out on. And that's why the tension. And I was, you know, hitting refresh the whole time today. And the kid, his name escapes me now, he shot 78. He was cruising, shot 6 over par last round, holds from over 30 feet on the last for a par to get his card on the mark.
What?
You know, he must have been shaking like a...
Oh, my God.
Probably can't say on the radio.
No.
What was his name? Young English kid. Chris Hansen.
Chris Hansen.
Hold across the last green for
30 par. 30-foot putt. After,
yeah, he was probably just...
over.
It was a hit and hope, I'd say, and it went in.
Oh, my God.
But he must have been in...
Celebrations tonight.
Oh, absolutely fantastic. You know, there's a lot of new names. A lot of names. There were 6 guys last night that I'd never heard of, so...
Okay.
And that's the changing of the guard, and
yeah,
that's why it's hard for the old-timers going back down there too.
But equally, it's great to have young talent emerging. I'll come back to Dubai in just a minute because I just want to break it up slightly. Ian Poulter said today that he reckons picking Tiger Woods as USA vice-captain for the Ryder Cup next year is a great shout. And I'm wondering what planet Ian Poulter is living on by saying something like that, because Tiger Woods, for me, is one of the most antisocial, disliked... players on the tour. Whatever you want to say about the effect he's had on golf, which is undisputed, and the success he's had, as a people person, he can't be up there. And I'm wondering what Davis Love is thinking by bringing someone like Tiger Woods into his team. What
I don't know. I don't understand it either. And I think
really?
Poulter's comments a dig more than anything else.
I see. I thought, yeah, he has to be taking the piss here. He can't just be tongue in cheek.
Yeah. I am.
Because I thought, yeah.
I don't know what. The big thing with Tiger is the fact that, you know, since the Berlin Wall has come down in his life, he has softened a lot. And seemingly he was up watching the President's Cup. And I saw with him at the Masters this year, I was on the range on the Sunday morning warming up. You know, he's playing with Rory. He's probably not in contention to win, but he's in contention to have a big finish. And Kevin Na comes over to him on the range and cracks a joke, and Tiger laughs back, and they had a kind of 30, 40 second bit of a joke before he went out to play.
Mm.
10 years ago.
Unheard of.
There's no way that would have happened. So perhaps he has softened a little bit. And, you know, maybe from a stature point of view, it'll take a bit of the... If you're looking at it from Davis Love's point of view, it might take a little bit of the limelight away from him, which could help.
Yeah, he could also come in handy, you know, spitting on the European Tour's putting line on the greens. Maybe try and put the ball up a little bit.
Perhaps.
I tell you, yeah, I when I saw Poulter's comments there, I just thought definitely has to.
Yeah, because like they had a ding dong a couple of years ago where, you know, I'm the number 2 on the planet type of thing, and
yeah,
maybe that was it, you know, because it. But then, you know, it could inspire Tiger as well. You know, it's a situation where, I mean, it happened with Garcia in Celtic Manor in 2010 when his career was kind of in the doldrums, and now he still hasn't achieved what he should achieve, but you know, he came back to playing golf at a top level again, and maybe Tiger might use that as a platform, because if he's not going to be fit, you know, you still want to stay in touch in some shape or form.
Garcia didn't play. He hasn't turned up for Dubai and pulled out of it. And he's been getting a bit of stick for that on social media as well. People saying, why aren't you supporting the tour season-ending event? And he said, look, I've missed two of the last 17, which includes the Volvo Masters at Valderrama before it became the Dubai season-ending tour. So, I mean, what's your view on this? I mean, should he have played? Do you think it's just a bit of a dig at the tour that he hasn't? Or is he perfectly entitled to do what he likes?
He's perfectly entitled to do what he likes. He's played as a minimum. It doesn't matter when you play them. He's played them. I just don't think he's enjoying the game anymore. Really don't. I mean, I watched him closely last week. And, I mean, his attitude on the course, not so much his attitude, but just his whole body language is completely off. I think there's... And it's a shame, like, he finished bogey triple when he had a chance. You know, he should have won that tournament on Sunday. I mean, there's a lot of guys that should have won it. There's no denying that. But he just doesn't seem a happy bunny at all. And I think it's reflected in his golf. And when his golf is off, I think it affects him emotionally a lot more.
Okay.
And in fairness to him, for a guy with his ability, he's taken a hammering because he should have won. You know, I think he's only won 11 times in Europe. Player of his calibre is pretty poor, and maybe he's had enough, really.
Okay, McIlroy did well today, obviously 4 under par. Shane Lowry not so. I just think, you know, the kind of season, maybe Shane is just not in good form at the moment, and that's perfectly fine. He's had an incredible year, and it's been a long year for him as well, and he must be a bit tired after everything, breaking into top 50, all that kind of stuff.
It's he's flatlined, there's no denying that, and it's disappointing for him because it's a big time of year, and he's just struggled really badly on the greens, and that happens. And hopefully he can dig something out of the last three rounds and try and nick a top 20 or whatever out of it. Because every penny is a prisoner when you're chasing Ryder Cup points.
Did you fancy anyone in particular? I didn't hear Tuesday, obviously I wasn't here.
I fancied Rory, Justin Rose, Henrik Stenson, and Brandon Grace. Henrik Stenson is holding them all up at 5 over.
Very good.
Rory's 4 under. Rose finished poorly today. I think he finished 2 or 3. And Brandon Grace is 4 under.
Okay, very good. A couple of live bets. We are going to move on because I can tell you the poll is just getting delayed a little bit, checking through. Promise we will talk to him in about 10, 15 minutes' time. So if you're staying tuned for that, 51552 for your text. We're going to move on to rugby, though, because obviously it's a massive game for Leinster in the Rugby Champions Cup this weekend. They play Bath at the Rec, and after what happened against Wasps at the RDS last weekend, it's very simple. They have to win this or they're gone. Michael Corcoran spoke to the head coach, Leo Cullen, and asked if there was going to be a reaction from last weekend this weekend.
Yeah, it has been a challenge. You know, it's just trying to get the game out of our system as quick as we possibly can, which is easier said than done when you lose 33-6 at home. Didn't really think the score really reflected the game, and we gave away probably three pretty cheap tries, and you know, we had a lot of possession but didn't probably utilise it as well as we could have in certain areas of the field. And then we lose three players through head knocks, which again caused a little bit of disruption in the way we want to go about chasing the game. But credit to Wasps, I thought they performed very well, they defended very well, made life difficult for us at the breakdown. And it's not going to get much easier against Bath this week because they have a quality team, a lot of really good players across the board, well coached, and we had a very good tough battle against them last year in the quarterfinals in the Aviva, so we know it's going to be a very tough challenge.
Now, I know from talking to fellas anecdotally, they'll tell me that when Josh Schmidt was in charge, they used to hide behind the couch during the video review session. I mean, what's a Leo Cullen video review session like?
You'd have to ask the players. I'm in full flow, so... Yeah, it's important that we point out areas where we can be better, and that's the reality. And there was a lot of areas where we could have been better at the weekend and would have made life a hell of a lot easier for ourselves. But it's important that we learn a few lessons, and that's just win, lose or draw, and then you move on to the next week. And that's the nature of this business at the moment, because we just have big game after big game coming up now, and it's important that we learn the lessons, whether we win or lose, and just move on.
Now, in terms of the game last week and indeed the build-up to it, there were a couple of people who were injured. The head knock people, if I can put them together as one cluster from last weekend, there would be a question mark about them being available on Saturday.
Yeah, Sean O'Brien, Rickard Strauss and Mike McCarty both went off with head knocks, or the three of them went off with head knocks. They'll be very tight, so the likelihood is they won't be playing in this weekend's game.
And Jack Conan picked up a nasty old injury in training during the week.
Yeah, it was just a freak thing. He was just, his boot got caught in the ground and he's managed to break his foot, and he'll have a procedure done next week, so he'll be out for probably 6 to 10 weeks.
And in terms of the other four people, including Eason Atewa, would you be happy that all four of them, or perhaps some of them, would come into contention?
Yeah, certainly a few of them will, and we'll just assess how they've come through today. They were training, and again, once we get the report, then we can make a full decision then.
You're in a sort of slightly unenviable position. I mean, you've lost your opening game at home. You're away to Bath at the Rec. They've got a pretty decent record there. I mean, given the fact that Toulon are the other team in this pool, Saturday's game is a game you really can't afford to lose.
Yeah, we've certainly made life very difficult for ourselves. It's an incredibly tough pool when you call out the teams that are in it, and losing a game at home makes life very, very difficult. So we need to make sure that we get as much as we possibly can out of this game. And we can't really think a huge amount beyond that, because it's a little bit irrelevant at this stage, because we can't take care of what else is going to happen in the other games in the pool. The other game wasn't played, so again, we don't know when that game is going to be played or how those points are going to be divvied up. We just need to focus now ourselves on Bath, and I suppose realising the enormity of that challenge in itself. So we need to go across there. We'll travel tomorrow, making sure that we're in the right mindset to go out and give a better account of ourselves.
And are you looking for a response? It's a horrible word, I know, but it's the one I'm using from the players this week, given the fact that last Sunday was such a horrible place.
Yeah, we were looking for a response at the start of the second half last week, but it never came, and we probably dug ourselves into a bigger hole. But yeah, this week has been about learning the lessons and moving on, and it's not really a response. We just need to perform better, and we need to understand we have a clear plan how we want to go about to get a result in this game, and it's about executing on that plan and improving on the areas where we fell down last week.
That's Leinster coach Leo Cullen speaking to Michael Corcoran a little bit earlier on today. Ronan O'Gara and Bernard Jackman are on the line, and great to talk to you both, lads. Bernard, just listen to Leo Cullen there. It's obvious that he's hurting an awful lot. I imagine the squad are obviously giving themselves a shake up this week as well. And if you're a Leinster fan listening to that, it's very hard to dislike Leo Cullen. And equally, he's very early into the job. So does he need to be given a bit of a break here and a bit more time?
Yeah, no, I think he does, particularly given it's a World Cup year. He had, it's obvious he's trying to change the style that Leinster are playing with, and you get your groundwork done in pre-season, and unfortunately for Leo and his coaching staff, the majority of his team were focused, on a World Cup and in a different camp for pre-season. So he got the players back a week or two earlier than probably he planned for. But they prepped well. Apparently they were confident going into the game and just didn't fire. And they did fire in terms of that they dominated, some of the key areas of the game in terms of territory and possession. But unfortunately they lacked that killer instinct in the opposition 22, and they gave up some soft scores, and the game got away from them. And at the end, they looked a little bit ragged, which happens, when you gear up for a big Champions Cup game at home, and how important it is. All home games are important in the Champions Cup, but given the quality of that group, at the end, it's natural that when guys haven't had a lot of time together and maybe not 100% sure of what they're supposed to do, in a pressurised environment like that, they looked probably worse than they are. I think Leinster has still the potential to be a very good side.
Ronan, I suppose one of the excuses offered was that, as Bernard said, the team didn't have a huge amount of time together since the end of the World Cup, and there was guys coming back in. But on the other hand, you can make the argument these guys should know each other inside out after playing together for years, most of them. So surely it shouldn't be that difficult to slot back in. I mean, is that fair?
I think the way I'm looking at it is that I don't think they were good enough to beat Wasps. I think if you take Theo Fitzgerald, Rob Carney and Nasebo out of the back line, it's completely different. One or two of them, you can get by with four of them, you've no chance at that level. For me, that's the reality. That's what makes the difference between really good test players, club players. I don't think people appreciate what's involved in performing week in, week out, and you just can't do that at this level.
Wow, okay. Yeah, because I suppose so much focus has been on the performance itself and
I agree with that, but I think it's... I think the mindset changed. I think players realise who they're playing with, and that's probably what disappointed them most, I suppose, when their backbone caved in and they were put under pressure. They rolled over, which is most on Leinster like, and as Leo said, 33-6 at home, a record defeat is... I was sitting in shock on the coach watching it. I couldn't believe it. So I think for the players, when you lose the momentum, you lose the body language battle, it goes downhill pretty quickly. But I think there will be sparks this weekend because they've been questioned in every single department, more so character-wise. So it'll be an interesting Saturday afternoon.
It will. Something I want to bring up with both of you as well, and Bernard, I'll put it to you first. Richie McCaw obviously renounced his retirement today. He was 20 years of age when he made his debut for the All Blacks. And it's, you know, it's been put into the papers that Andre Pollard was last year's IRB Under-20 Player of the Year. And he lined out for South Africa in the semi-finals of the World Cup against New Zealand at 21 years of age. And Gary Ringrose, who came on at the RDS and albeit only got 9 minutes, but made a break, made an offload, almost scored a try, is of the same age and appears to have all the talent in the world, according to everybody that has ever coached him, and yet can't get his way into that Leinster team. And I'm wondering, do you think that he's been handled correctly? That, you know, just because he's young, should he be prevented from playing for the first team, or is there reasons behind this? What would you do?
No, I don't think age should stop him playing. You know, everybody that has worked with him and has seen him close up, you know, certainly speaks about him in the same way they spoke about, you know, O'Driscoll when he came through first, or Luke Fitzgerald when he came into the Leinster squad when he was only 18. It was obvious he, you know, he had huge ability. You know, I've only seen a glimpse of him playing, you know, Guinness 412 games. You know, he had a nice introduction at the weekend for 9 minutes. But, you know, unfortunately, he hasn't had the opportunity and to do it.
It's very frustrating, I suppose, if you're watching that, though, Bernard. You're watching a kid who, and again, I've seen a bit of him at 220 level, and I'm not the best judge in the world, but he clearly has something, you know. And
no, he looks like he's an outstanding talent. I suppose, you know, it's just a question for Leo and his coaches: when is he ready, and when can they put him in? Probably if they lose to Bath this weekend, you know, it's more likely he's probably improving his chance of playing because probably the pressure is off to qualify the group, and they can look at some of the guys who've performed well for him, you know, while the senior international is away. I suppose from Leinster's point of view, the most important thing is that they've got a really bright young talent that's very, very close to making the breakthrough. You know, I suppose his game time and his progress needs to be managed. And, you know, I'm sure Joe Schmidt will be speaking to Leo and making sure that, you know, he gets enough game time to develop quickly. But you earn it, you know, and he has, you know, as you've said, he has looked really sharp in everything he's done. And the next step is to start the Champions Cup game and perform, and I'm sure that's not far away.
And Ronan, I mean, like, you know, the argument is, so what if he's a bit raw and maybe makes the odd mistake? Why not just throw him in there and just get him that experience and allow him to play and feel his way in? If he's good enough, then he's going to develop quickly, and you're going to have a world-class centre in your hands sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I would agree, Hugh. I think, and I have strong beliefs on this topic, I think what the public wouldn't realise, though, would be that the best judges of these are probably his fellow players. And you can be sure if he's the best, they'll want him on the team. I can give you examples of Dennis Leamy coming out of schools, Keith Earls, Conor Murray, Peter O'Mahony. There's mini games and training every day of the week, and a guy's talent sticks out like a radar very, very quickly. And players, because of the nature of the business and how competitive Munster, Leinster, Ulster are, Connacht, to an extent, no, they want to be playing with the best players, whether they're 18 or 38, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. They want them on the pitch, and they make those thoughts known in whatever way. So I think most definitely if he's 18, if he's 16, get him in there. But the flip side is that I saw the game against Clonetley, and I don't think you would have picked him out as a player ready for the now, if you were looking at that game alone. But I haven't seen training sessions, so I think you probably have to do a fair bit of analysis to get a correct judgment. It's easier to be at the hurler on the ditch and give your twopence worth. But
sure, yeah.
I think, like everything else, you have to really, really comment accurately on these cases to be fair to the young kid involved, because he needs every opportunity to grow. But I think that was a game against was he Mark and Tagatakabo, and
was he in the centre? Was he in the centre on the wing that day? I didn't see it. I'm not sure.
I recall he was on the wing.
Yeah,
but I might be mistaken. I just remember watching, because I don't know the player, and obviously he's going to be an exceptional player. But the best judges these are usually the people that handle him every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I mean, those coaches will know, I think, what's best for him. And sometimes the flip side is that sometimes you put them in and you can kill them.
Yeah.
And they're not ready, you know, and that's, I think, an important skill as too. But I agree, there's definitely times when we are far too negative or slow in terms of blooding. If you're young enough, you're good enough, it doesn't matter. But I can guarantee you that the opportunity to excel in, or to shine in training, is most definitely there, and you get your chance.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair point. I suppose the question is, Bernard, do you think that Leinster are going to beat Bath this weekend? Because if they don't, as Ronan said, they're gone and they're done. So
yeah, they're capable of beating them, but it's very hard to see it based on the probably the lack of cohesion that they showed. I think they will turn up and be a lot more physical. There'll be a lot more intensity around how they bring. But I think Bath are a good side. I think if you look back to last year in the quarter final, Bath came minus a lot of their front rows. We're under serious pressure in the scrum, and yes, you know, we're very unlucky not to win the game. They've recruited well, bringing in guys like Rhys Priestland, Matawalu from Glasgow, and they're a well-drilled side. And the Rec is a, you know, it's a brilliant place to play, but it's a pretty difficult place to get a win.
Hmm.
So I couldn't say Leinster are good enough to win for sure, but on what we saw last weekend, and I've seen some bad, you know, they haven't been in world class form so far this season, but you certainly feel that they have the squad to maybe do damage, you know, get out of this group anyway. I think that they have a squad that can get out of this group, even though it's taking into account the fact that it's a really tough group.
Gary, do you want to come in?
Yeah, guys, I just wanted to ask you, how much time do you think Leo Cullen will get if they fail miserably in Europe?
You see his contract. You get 2 years for sure, and maybe longer, I think.
Okay, all right, that's an endorsement. Ronan, I imagine it's been a difficult time to be an Irishman for anyone in Paris at the moment, or indeed in France for that matter. It must have been a pretty tough few days since last Friday.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, it's very real. It's very surreal at the same time. It's yet so near, yet so far. It's kind of, I think, disbelief, and then it's actually happening. So it's extremely bizarre, and everything. And I've never experienced anything like it. And yeah, it's difficult. I don't really have words for it. I don't really know exactly how to explain it, but it's
I mean, you're bringing up a family like over there at the moment, and I don't know. I just, because it's never happened, you know, here before, in terms of, obviously we leave out the northern situation for a moment, but to this scale where you could be just walking around the street and God knows what's around the next corner. I'm just wondering how you feel. Do you have to reassess things now?
That's the key point. You know, I think they're going after nice venues, sporting venues, nice, you know, theatres, cafes. So when it gets to that stage, you probably, it's obviously not good. But it's a great country. I think there's some great people here, and the locals are kind of confident of winning, so you just have to wait and see what it'll be like in another month's time, you know. But I think the annoying thing is that the locals feel like it's only the start of things, so it's just kind of head down time, you know.
Yeah, I imagine sport takes a back seat, you know. I suppose around this time it must be hard for, I know you got a match this weekend obviously in Wales, and Racing's game was cancelled last week, but how are the lads about it? I mean, are they just trying to get on with the job now and just focus on the match?
Yeah, actually getting on the pitch is good, but everything else is just consumed with watching the TV and watching what's going on, you know, in the clubhouse and stuff. So it's just, it's occupying everyone's mind, I think, you know. It's, there was some, I suppose, small bit of understanding for the Charlie Hebdo situation, as perverse as it was, but this time there's just absolutely no reasoning, so people are lost for words, really. But it's good to get on the pitch, but once the sessions end, it's back to watching the TV and see what's going on.
Bernard, outside of Paris, I mean, Grenoble, what's the reaction like around there?
Yeah, the same, just massive shock, disbelief, and I suppose fear. And I mean, after what happened on Friday night, you know, there was raids in different parts of France, and in Grenoble, you know, they made arrests. They found, you know, guns and the rocket launchers and stuff. And so even though Paris is 5 hours away, you know, you realise that this isn't an isolated to Paris. It could potentially be all over. So, but you know, the French are very strong, and you know, they really believe that it's an attack on, the reason they're being attacked is because of the values they have, and you know, liberty and equality, and how they live their life, and they're very proud of that. And I think it's actually made the people stronger, and there's a real sense of unity, and they're willing to go through the pain that's necessary to try and, I suppose, find a solution, which won't be easy. But I think that the leadership that has been shown has been strong, and you just got to get on with it, and you know, look towards the future, I suppose.
Okay, look, stay safe over there, lads. Thanks a million for your time, appreciate it, and best of luck, Ronan, with the match this weekend, and Bernard as well, London Irish. Thanks a lot, lads. Cheers.
Thank you.
Bernard Jackman, Ronan O'Gara there. Yeah, it's impossible to imagine what that's like, isn't it? Living over there at the moment.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy stuff. As you say, you just couldn't imagine it, really.
Yeah, count your blessings for small things. Anyway, as I mentioned, this week we're counting down to the Air Grid International Rules game. This Saturday, Ireland's best Gaelic footballers up against Australia under lights at Croke Park. Air Grids, much like the GAA, operate right across the country, and as official sponsors of the International Rules, want you to be there this Saturday, and they've given us a family set of 4 tickets to the game to give away tonight. To be in with a chance to win, all you have to do is answer this question: which Armagh player is the all-time record scorer in the International Rules series? Which Armagh player is the all-time record scorer in the International Rules series? Text your answer and your name now to 51552. We'll have tonight's winner before the end of the show, and then we're going to pick out the overall winner who gets upgraded for the accommodation and the match mascot as well. 51552 for your text messages. We're back with International Rules after these.
Get your game face on.
Game on 2FM.
And you're welcome back. Now, as I said, Ireland take on Australia in the Air Grid International Rules Test on Saturday at Croke Park. We're going to speak to, who have we got coming in tomorrow? Bernard Flynn's coming in tomorrow to studio to go through the game itself. But Ty Kennelly, of course, is part of the Australian backroom team, and he's been speaking to Brian Carthy about the strengths of the Australian team. Have a listen.
This is the dream team of Australian rules footballers. This is the best of the best. The AFL have decided, you know, last year it was the best team that's ever played the game. This year it's even better. You've got 5 captains of AFL clubs. You've got you can only play if you've had an all-star. If you've actually won an all-star, an all-Australian equivalent, is the only way you can play. This is certainly a dream team. It's a dream team coaching. It's a dream team administration that's come over. And it's the best players. And they mean business. The last time they stepped out in Croke Park, it was an embarrassment for an Australian team. You know, and they know that. And certainly it won't be an embarrassment, I know, this Saturday night, because you've got the players that are best in the competition, that are best in Australia, and they're winners. They want to win, you know. And like I said, they understand that they're playing for their country, and that the passion's starting to come through in them. We've had a week in New York. A bit of sightseeing, a bit of enjoying the festivities and some training and getting to know each other. But since we touched on in Dublin yesterday, you can clearly see the mindset's focused on being an elite footballer, an elite professional environment where they're really set and actually putting on a good contest for Australian jersey.
Now you're going to provide an insight to Australia, to the type of player that they'll be facing from Ireland. You're familiar with many of them, and the one Kerry player on the team, Donica Walsh.
Yeah, look, it's great. Donica's had a great year. Donica's had a great few years, you know. For me, highly underrated footballer, and having seen him firsthand in 2009, you know, his ability to work hard, his ability to do a job, without any fuss, get it done, you know, works hard, he really is a workhorse for the team, gets the job done, gets on, gets off, and you know, there's not much word from him, but he gets the job. And I'm glad, you know, that Donegal got the reward this year that he deserved, you know, and certainly it would have been nice to have a few more Kerry players. But look, you look at the squad that they've got, and it's an elite, you know, obviously Bernard Brogan. You've got the best Gaelic footballers against the best AFL players, which always assured the hybrid game. This game is actually a genuine contest when the series themselves are actually level on win-loss. So it's all to play for.
Okay, there you have it. Ty Kennelly speaking to Brian Carthy earlier today. Now, as I promised, earlier this afternoon, Paul Dunn from Greystones Golf Club in County Wicklow secured his European Tour card for next season after final round 72 at the qualifying school in Girona. It's been a bit of a long trek to get this far, and I'm delighted to say that Paul Dunn is on the line. Paul, congratulations.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
Yeah, you must be absolutely delighted. Gary's here with me as well. Look, I mean, are you exhausted, Paul? How are you feeling after that? That was a slog.
Yeah, wrecked. To be honest, the first five rounds weren't too bad. But today, you know, it was quite stressful start to finish. Just kind of trying to get through the line. But, yeah, no, it's great. You know, it's been a long few months trying to get through. So I'm glad it's finally over. I'm just standing here getting some food in the airport. So just looking forward to getting home and sleeping in my own bed tonight.
Yeah, I'd say you are. I mean, you know, Gary said to me, you know, a few weeks back when Q School was just starting off the first stage, that only two guys who started at the first stage last year made it through to get their card this year. So, I mean, the odds of you actually doing this, you know, were pretty slim. And to go out, considering the year you've had, Paul, as well, and everything that you've had to take in this year, I just think it makes it all the more impressive.
Yeah, well, thanks. I mean, people have done it before, so it obviously means it can be done. No, I knew. I mean, if you looked at it simply, all I had to do was really finish in the top 20 in three tournaments in a row. Like, when you break it down and put it in a simpler term like that, it seems a lot more achievable than when you say that only two people do it that enter. So yeah, I knew if I played well for 3 weeks, I'd get through without much hassle. But I mean, it was the last two stages were a bit more stressful than I would have liked them. But I'm happy to get through in the end.
Because it was a slow enough start for you this time around as well, the first couple of rounds, and then you kind of made your move midway through the stages. And obviously, as you said, you were in a good position going into the last round today, but there's no guarantees out there, as we saw with Damien McGrain.
Yeah, well, the first four rounds, you play two rounds around a different course, which is a bit easier. But, you know, I didn't really take advantage of that. I shot two under and level par around there when everyone else seems to be shooting four or five under, so that kind of got me a bit behind through three rounds. But then, you know, I played well around the tougher course. And the tougher course suited me more. You know, I was hitting the ball well and was struggling a bit with the putting over the first two rounds. And then the putter kind of heated up more towards the end. So I shot a couple good rounds there in round four and five around the harder course and jumped me up the leaderboard a lot and gave me some, I guess a bit of cushion room going into today. And, yeah, I was delighted to finally get over the line.
Two massive pars today, 9 and 14. Can you talk us through them?
Yeah, well, 9, I mean, 9's a tough hole. I missed the green left and had a pretty basic chip, but the lie in the rough was quite bad. And I kind of played for a little, I mean, there was a lot of grass right behind the ball, so I played for a little duff and run. It came out really clean and went about 25 feet past. And I managed to hold that one for par. You know, that was big. And then after a bogey on 13... I hit a bad second shot to 14 and a bunker shot to about 10 feet. So that 10-footer not to drop two shots in a row was key. Because if I dropped a shot on 14, I really felt like I would have had to birdie the par 5 15 when I had a bit of breathing room then at the end. Making it for par, you know, just kind of made it a little more stress relieving coming in rather than being right on the bubble playing the last few holes.
I didn't envy Collie following you around the place, because however tough it was for you, I mean, at least you're able to go out there and swing the club and you know what you're doing, you know, you're in control of your own. I saw a couple of pictures that Brian Keogh from the Irish Sports Golf Desk put up on Twitter of your dad biting his nails. It just looked like he was nervous following you around the place.
Yeah, well, Dad flew out this morning and flying back tonight, so I don't think he would have missed it for anything. I don't know what he was like out there, but yeah, no, he always says it's better watching than watching updates online. So
yeah,
if he was nervous, I'd say he's less nervous than if he was in work.
Gary's here beside me.
Paul, well done. Delighted for you. Fantastic achievement.
Cheers, Paul. Gary. Thank you.
How would you compare the nerves the last couple of days compared to playing the Open this summer?
But it's different. I mean, when you're playing a tournament when there's no limit of where to finish, like you had to finish in the top 25 this week, you're just trying to do as well as you can. But then going into today is a bit weird because I was in 12th and you don't know whether to try to push on and go forward or play a little more conservative and just try to stay in the top 25. So it's a different mindset. It's kind of a difficult one for me to really know how to think about how I want to play. So rather than going out there and just trying to shoot as low score as you can, I didn't know whether I should take shots on or lay up a bit more. So it was a bit more of a, I don't know.
It was more of a steering job.
Mentally it was more difficult to know what to take on and what not to. Kind of played a lot of mind games with me. So yeah, probably this one was probably more stressful and the other one was more exciting.
Christmas coming up, an incredible year. I mean, obviously everything happened at the Open. It must seem like a long way since you were, you know, playing the NCAA in the final rounds there. Paul, everything that's after happening in between, you obviously made your debut, you know, on the professional circuit as well. I mean, are you going to take the next couple of weeks out now just to try and get your head together and maybe make some plans now to make it as easy as possible for you to start your pro career proper?
No, I'm playing South Africa next week and Australia the week after, so not much rest.
So I'm
home for a day and then I'm back out to South Africa. So.
God. Okay.
Yeah, no, it's grand. I'm going to have 4 weeks off after that anyway, so try to get a leg up on the race to Dubai standings.
Okay, well look, it's been brilliant to talk to you. Well done and everything. If you fancy a few holes on Christmas Day, I'm going out with Carl on the local course there. If you fancy 9 o'clock in the morning after breakfast.
Well, Paul, you're going to the jungle.
Might not be awake.
You're going to the jungle next week in Leopard Creek, so playing golf with Hugh will be a similar experience.
Very good.
Listen, we'll let you go on. I know you're exhausted, right, and you've got some food there, Paul. Thanks, many, for taking the time to talk to us, and best luck with everything over the next while.
No worries. Thanks very much, guys.
Cheers. Thanks, Paul. Paul Dunn there. Okay. And the winner of tonight's competition, by the way, tickets to the match in Croke Park this weekend, family of four, is John Boyle. And the answer, of course, was the top scorer, Gary?
Stephen McDonald.
Yeah, very good. And we'll have the overall winner just before the end of the show. Okay, 51552 for your text messages. Jeff Shepherd is on the line, waiting patiently. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Hugh, has the country stopped celebrating yet?
I'll be very honest with you, Jeff. I haven't stopped celebrating because I was on holidays last week and then I came back and I went out on Monday to watch the match. I went out on Tuesday to celebrate the fact that we got through. Last night to bring myself back from the edge. And tonight I've just booked myself in for a few pints with my wife to take the edge off it. So I am on a week-long bender.
Congratulations, you've earned it.
It's been fantastic. Drinkaware.ie, as JJ says. Listen, we were talking on email earlier on about Ronda Rousey and the reaction in the States to her, what was a shock defeat. And I'm very interested to know how her star is at the moment, because she was this massive, massive superstar before she fought that fight. And Holly Holm looks like she's done an awful lot of damage, Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she was obviously an overwhelming favorite to win. And I don't know if people just maybe got sick and tired of always hearing about her. Hmm. You know, I was always thinking, man, this is great, man. This woman's kicking everybody's butt. You know, she's going to fight a man at some point, or, you know, she's going to fight a boxer. We're going to see what's going on. But I guess there was just kind of this underground, you know, backlash building just waiting for her to fall. And, you know, just a lot of celebrities tweeting things and, you know, people making comments, Layla Ali saying, you know, real champions don't lose, and, you know, some other, you know, other people saying stuff. I mean, Floyd Mayweather actually took up for her. You know, I saw her. I thought that was interesting. But
yeah,
it was odd to just see that many people just kind of fall off the bandwagon.
Yeah, that's kind of, it's kind of sad, I have to say, for me, Jeff, to watch it. It's something, you know, we're great at that in this country, you know, building somebody up and then just taking a swipe at them with their highest and knocking and just enjoying watching them fall to the ground. And I think Ronda Rousey, she was beaten and she was beaten, you know, the manner in which she was knocked out was horrific. But I think there's something pretty perverse about taking a lot of pleasure in somebody who's that good, and she's still very, very good, you know, falling from grace, so to speak.
Yeah, I don't understand why people would enjoy that. I mean, it really just kind of, you know, like I said, it almost feels like they jumped off the bandwagon quickly and looking to pile on her. Hmm. And, you know, I think she's embarrassed as well. I mean, you know, she felt, I think she probably felt like she was going to win easily and was ready to move on to the next fight. And, you know, they had video of her coming in on the airplane the other day, and she's got her face covered up because, you know, she's a, you know, she took a obviously a severe kick and then two big punches to the face. And so she's bruised up and she's embarrassed. And so there's bruised ego and all that stuff. But I, you know, I don't anticipate her retiring anytime soon. I think she'll be back in the ring or the octagon, you know, pretty soon.
Yeah, and hopefully she will be. Can I ask you if you think that anybody's going to stop the Patriots? Myself and Gary were just talking about it off mic. It looks like there's maybe one, maybe two teams who could stop them getting 6-0. Realistically, will that happen?
I mean, they've got the Bills this weekend on Monday night in Massachusetts. And Rex Ryan, you know, was with the Jets for a long time, and he has always played the Patriots, you know, pretty tight. The Patriots were blowing them out in week one this year, and the Bills came back and made it close. I think the biggest thing is, you know, can they stay healthy? If Rob Gronkowski gets hurt, that is obviously a game changer. And they don't really throw the ball over the middle to him a lot, where he can take a lot of shots to his knee or maybe take a shot to the head, you know, and get knocked out. So, you know, he's the biggest weapon in football that Tom Brady used. But, you know, they've got a backup running back. Julian Edelman got hurt this week, so you've got some, you know, some backup receivers playing there. Quite honestly, they're playing great, and they're in complete, you know, revenge deflategate mode, and they have been all year. They've been playing some closer games lately. At the beginning of the year, they were blowing everybody out. They've kind of come back a little bit to the pack. But they're clearly the best team in football. I mean, I could easily see them going 14-2, 15-1. I think they do have to play the Broncos later in the year. But Peyton Manning, you know, may or may not be there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, that certainly changes that. And that's a big story this week as well. You know, Manning breaks the passing record and then leaves the game, you know, with four or five interceptions later. I mean, he just had a terrible day. So, you know, he's getting a lot older. This may be the end of it for him this season.
Okay, we'll wait and see. Listen, enjoy the weekend, Jeff. We'll catch up with you next week. Thanks a million.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.
Super stuff, Jeff Shepherd, as always. Okay, thanks for your company tonight. The overall winner of our prize, JJ's drawn it out. It's Richard McSweeney from Tuesday night's show. So you've just been upgraded to an overnight stay along with your match tickets. And of course, you get the opportunity to pick someone to be a mascot for the game itself. Yeah, fantastic stuff. Okay, we are bang over time. Gary, my thanks to you.
Pleasure here, thank you.
Enjoy the weekend. We'll talk to you next week.